Our NHL insider for Metro Ford. We say hello to Chris Johnston, who I know is back in Toronto. CJ, what is happening, my friend?
Not much, and you need to not take this personally, Will, but where is Pinder? Is he lost in Florida? Do we know his whereabouts? I'm concerned about him.
Here's your inside look at the glorious life of Ryan Pinder. He goes to spring training in Dunedin for a week, and he doubles that up, and now he is with his family on vacation at a place in Palm Springs.
Oh, wow. Florida to California in back-to-back weeks. That's a pretty good life.
And I can't remember. I believe he was probably in the city of Calgary for about 10 minutes. Like, he was not here for very long. So, yeah, that's doing it right, if I'd say so myself.
Well, we will have to forge on without him.
Absolutely. And I guess we will transition now into some hockey talk, Chris. And boy, we talked on Tuesday about how dark and stormy it was around the Maple Leafs. They get it done against the Buffalo Sabres last night. What did you make of that contest between the Leafs and the Sabres?
Well, really, the two they've played in the last 2 days were a step forward. I mean, it might sound kind of crazy to say that a 3-0 loss in Nashville on Tuesday was a positive, but I think given how bad last week was, how dreadful their defensive play was, you know, they didn't give up many chances in that game. One of the goals was an empty netter, you know, against a good team in a tough building, and then to finish off the back-to-back with a win in Buffalo last night, which was actually far more lopsided than the score ended up, just because of a good night, great night from Carter Hutton, the Sabres goaltender. You know, things have stabilized somewhat, I guess. I mean, you're not really going to know, I guess, until you see this over a longer period of time. And, you know, one of the issues the Leafs have with their schedule is, you know, they don't have very many difficult teams in the last couple weeks of the season. They're playing largely teams out of the playoff race. And so even if they continue to play well, I think there'll be some level of doubt about, you know, how it's going to stand up against playoff competition. But, you know, that's kind of where they're at these days. It did manage to calm things in the water with the way they played the last two nights, and were able to not have just a slew of odd man rushes and pucks going in the net.
You know, it's funny because we talked, you know, on Tuesday about how the play on the ice wasn't all that good, and you're right. And that last two games since we had last spoke have been in the right direction, and yet maybe I should have started with this, but post-game Tuesday, another public jab at GM Kyle Dubas from Mike Babcock. At least that's the way I took it, as he mentioned that Nashville doesn't have to overplay their players because they've got enough depth. What do you make of kind of a couple of these public shots from Babcock and maybe where this marriage goes forward? Because knowing the contract of the coach and knowing how young the GM is, it's not like either of these guys are going anywhere anytime soon, Chris. How do they make this work?
Well, I think there's some tension right now with, you know, a lot of things. The way the season's gone, there's some frustration that, you know, the Leafs have got to this point of the year and they're playing their worst hockey. You know, they've run into some injuries that they didn't have as many injuries early on that have probably impacted things. And, you know, maybe the coaching staff wouldn't have minded having a bit more depth at you know, on the blue line specifically. You know, the weird thing about that comment the other night about not overplaying your players is, you know, Toronto, to my eyes, doesn't really have to do that. I mean, right now, I suppose you could make that argument. You know, they're playing Morgan Rielly a fair bit, but, you know, he's had 24 minutes in the game at Nashville. It's not something that you know, a lot of number one defensemen around the league are playing that much routinely each and every game. And, you know, among the forward lines, you don't have to lean as heavily on a Matthews or a Tavares or a Marner as other teams might be, just because they're able to sprinkle depth through the lineup. So I don't really know exactly where that one was aimed. You know, we are in a period, though, right now where it feels as though everything that Mike says publicly is being scrutinized under this in this way because there is this perceived issue there. You know, Kyle Dubas, you know, hasn't said much to the media since the trade deadline in a formal way, but did have a tweet this week that some interpreted as being part of this. You know, I think it's a little bit overblown just because it's a pretty hot hockey market where things have gone wrong, and so everyone starts looking around for explanations, and you know, all the old things that have been under the surface kind of get raised again. But, you know, I don't believe this is a working relationship that can't survive. You know, we've seen a lot of other situations. You know, I think of Joel Quenneville and Stan Bowman in Chicago as a pretty prominent recent one where, you know, the coach and the GM were rather publicly not on the same page, but, you know, that team won three Stanley Cups. with those two in their positions. And obviously Joel was let go this year, but well, that went on for a period of time. So I think that winning, as it does in most cities, will solve a lot of the perceived problems. But, you know, I do think that there's some curiosity here just because Kyle's so much younger than his head coach. You know, we don't have a lot of 33-year-old general managers. And, you know, Mike Babcock is a huge figure in the game. You know, coached Team Canada at the last three best-on-best tournaments. Never has minded making things tense around him. You know, has always been one to sort of critique player roster moves a little bit more than your average coach. And so they have a unique dynamic, and everyone's sort of trying to figure out what's going on.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet's our guest Tuesday and Thursday here on Flames at 5 on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We'll stay in Ontario, and the Sens in here tonight as they'll take on the Flames here in less than 2 hours' time. And we know what the season's been like on the ice, Chris. I think, judging by your Twitter feed, you just listened to his interview on Primetime Sports and Eugene Melnyk with the guys in Toronto on 590 The Fan. But what's the biggest thing going into the offseason for this Sens group? Because, and now more than ever, I am more convinced that, you know, Brian Murray was really the glue in this organization, because ever since he passed away, things have been in quite the downward spiral. Their season ticket numbers are dropping. Their arena deal fell apart. Lawsuits everywhere. This fan base is mad at their owner. What are you watching for? What's so important for the Sens group as they try to get the fans' trust back and try to kind of turn this corner on this rebuild, Chris?
Well, I think patience now, ironically. You know, if they've traded away a Mark Stone and Erik Karlsson in the last calendar year, a bunch of notable players before that, you know, there isn't really an easy way to get back to being competitive. And so, you know, I think they need to have a great draft. Their efforts will be hurt because they don't own their own pick, and it could be the number one overall pick going to Colorado. But they have stockpiled a huge number of first, second, and third rounders over the next three drafts in the series of rebuilding type of trades they've made. And so, you know, it's absolutely imperative if they're going to have a brighter future that they hit on some of these picks. And then, you know, not just the ones that end up in the first round. I think some in those other rounds, I mean, they need to have a good time at the draft table and not do anything too crazy. You know, I think that there's a chance here. Sometimes when you're around an organization that sort of hits rock bottom, which is what they look like to me, likely to finish 31st this year in the standings, and again, not having their own first round pick while doing that is a terrible combination, something that should never happen and probably will never happen again in our sport. But, you know, they have a ton of cap space. They have an ability, I think, to get even more assets by taking on bad contracts. You know, if I was in Pierre Dorion's shoes, as soon as it got to the point in the offseason where you start making moves, I mean, I think you call Edmonton for one, maybe Toronto, you know, teams that have some pretty big cap issues, the Tampa Bay Lightning, fall into this group and try to get something useful out of there in exchange for taking on a contract that those teams need to get rid of just because of their situations. And you know, you got to start doing that. You got to make some smart bets. And, you know, I won't say it's beyond them, but, you know, as long as Eugene Melnyk's the owner, I mean, you're filtering everything through that prism about will they get it right? Will they stick, you know, stay on a consistent path and not veer wildly in whatever direction, you know, the emotions take them in the moment? And, you know, even that interview you just referenced with Bob McCowan here in Toronto on the Fan 590, I mean, pretty bizarre. I mean, he almost was taking a task that some Sens fans aren't real fans and things like this. I mean, given what that organization's been through in the 2 years since it was almost in the Stanley Cup final to now, I mean, they're lucky they have anyone that's still buying tickets. And I happen to know a few people personally that do. So there's some people out there that are still supporting this team against reason. And I think they have to start giving those fans and others that maybe have fallen off a reason to watch next season.
Speaking of Erik Karlsson, of course, he's been out of San Jose lineup for a little while. He was back for that handful of games. He missed a month right around the All-Star game, but did play in the All-Star game. A little gray area around his injury. Any update that you can provide in terms of if this guy is going to be ready come the postseason? And on the set, maybe a bigger question is, it's been very quiet on an extension front. Do you get any sense that he is going to stay in San Jose, or is he going to test the market come July?
Well, all indications are that he will be back for the playoffs, or perhaps even a game or two beforehand. He has been skating in San Jose pretty regularly. of late, and I think Raley is taking his time to be sure everything is healed and that the best position possible. Given that obviously the Sharks are battling, would love to pass Calgary and win the division, but they're in a good position at the moment. I don't think there's any reason for him being taking any risks with his health, and so unless he has a setback here that isn't anticipated, I would say he will be back for the playoffs. And I don't really know where things stand with him and the Sharks. There have been meetings with Doug Wilson, with the ownership and Eric's family. I think that a lot of it, unless it's being done very, very quietly, has been shelved while he's been injured and as they're getting into the meaty part of the season here. But, I think it's a little too early to say one way or another whether he'll be back with the Sharks. I think that they have a great history of that organization of retaining their players. Even Evander Kane, who was brought over the deadline last year, signed an extension. They seem to have a good thing going on. And, great ownership, a nice city to live in, a team that's now been in the playoffs 14 to 15 years. I think they have a lot to sell to Eric, but, my sense of things is that probably now won't happen until they play their last game of the year and some point in the offseason. And, I just don't know where Eric's heart is at. Part of my instinct tells me that he's the sort of guy that would like to go the John Tavares route and, have everybody talk to him and, really weigh his options, because obviously, I'm sure this injury's given him a different perspective. This is his last big contract as an NHL player, but, not many players willingly leave San Jose, so I can't really tell you where it's going to end up, but it does seem as though contract talks have been shelved here the last month or two.
Chris Johnson's our guest. Two more for you, Chris. Vegas, who might face San Jose in round one of the playoffs, is 9-1 their last 10 since they acquired Mark Stone. They had their fun with the Sharks on Monday. They went to the Cup final last year. From afar, how dangerous do you see the Vegas Golden Knights in the Western Conference playoffs?
No one wants to face them in round one. I think that's as good a reason as any for the Sharks to push, and the flip side of that, the Flames to try to win the division. I think you're not getting any easy matchups this day and age, but Vegas, despite having had a bit of an up and down year, especially early on, and won't finish with near the point total they had last season, I think you could argue they're more dangerous right now than they were at this point last year. And I know things came together for them. They went on a run and made it to that Cup final, but with Mark Stone, I think they have a bit more of a superstar's edge. They've also added Paul Stastny in the offseason and have him playing now, Max Pacioretty, along with the core of the group that they got the job done last year. So, I think they've taken a step forward as a team, and even having gone through that experience, there's not very many red flags with this team. I mean, if there's one, it's just wondering how Marc-Andre Fleury will hold up after playing, I still think, more than any other goaltender right now in the league, in terms of the amount of appearances he's made, that could be something that catches up to them as the spring goes along. But they look like a very dangerous team. I think you're always wary of the teams that finish strong. Those tend to be the ones that continue that on and have playoff success. And I wouldn't call it a stretch to say that Vegas is perhaps even the favorite in the West, or certainly in the top two or three teams you would put in that group as we get close to the playoffs here.
And last one for you, the NHL announcing today that Philadelphia, Chicago will play in Prague to kick off the season, Buffalo, Tampa, and Stockholm in November. I just maybe take us inside the process, Chris, or as much as you can, in terms of how the league decides who goes overseas and how they end up on these four teams moving forward.
Well, it's, often the teams are volunteering. In this case, the current CBA actually has a provision in it that every team is supposed to appear in one of these games during the length of the CBA. I don't think that's going to happen because they haven't been running the entire time. And obviously, could be expiring as soon as a year from the September, and a number of teams haven't gone over. But so it's a combination of working it around. They're looking for natural fits. Taking Rasmus Dahlin to Sweden, for example, with the Buffalo Sabres, and the recent first overall pick from last year. I mean, you're trying to get a mix of players that have local connections in order to help drive the interest in those events. As we had Laine and Barkov in the Winnipeg, Florida game, and the two of those in Helsinki earlier this season. And, you know, I think that there's also another consideration which makes it a little harder for the Canadian teams to get involved is that the league has to buy out home dates or a home date from each team to do it. And obviously the gate that's brought in a city like Calgary or Toronto is vastly different than one that you might see from some other places in the U.S. where ticket prices aren't as high or they don't sell out as routinely. So I think it's a financial decision. It's a decision based on where the players and teams are from and obviously the teams themselves. I think a lot of them see it as a nice opportunity maybe for bonding for the ones that go over during training camp but also to start marketing their brands in some other cities and give them exposure on the other side of the world.
Chris, fantastic stuff. As always, enjoy the rest of your evening. I'm sure you'll have the Sens and Flames on every screen in your house because it'll be just amazing to watch. And I hope you have a great weekend. We'll chat with you next week.
I will probably keep an eye on it just out of morbid curiosity because the Sens have been pretty plucky given that their lineup does not look like a full NHL lineup. Even last night, I almost came back in Vancouver. So
And Brännström's playing tonight, so that's always good.
Exactly. So you want to see what's coming next. I'll probably be watching that game.
Cheers, Chris. Enjoy the weekend, pal.
You too, Will. Thanks, bud.